the Lord willing, we will this morning and next week reflect upon the book of Ruth. Ruth is a well-known story. Every child Bible, no matter how much abbreviated, has this tale. And she is there in the pictures, usually beautiful dark hair, a willowy figure, and big brown eyes demurely gazing out at you. It is a story with a sad beginning, but a happy end. It's really all that one can wish for in a child's story. But is that it? A nice story with a sad beginning and a happy end. If you read the real version in the Bible, like we did the first half, it is indeed a nice story, well balanced, elegantly written, and a neat composition. The story drops hints early on, the relevance of which become clear only later. One example is the first verse in chapter 2. Naomi had a relative from her husband's side, a man of standing, and then the story goes on. The story also leaves many questions unanswered and open to our dreaming and our imagination. Was Boaz married already? Were there more children? Did they love each other? Yes, the story is well written, a charming, a delightful story, and a joy to read. But the Bible is not an upmarket ladies' magazine, which might print such stories for the sake of them. Ruth is one of only two books in the Bible that are named after women. The only other one is Esther. Now, about Esther, we were told that she was Jewish and beautiful. And because she was beautiful, she caught the eye of the Persian king Ahasuerus and became his queen. And in that position, as a Jewess, she risks her life to plead for her people, saving Israel from a near certain extinction by Haman. She saved her people, and thereby the coming of the Messiah. And in remembrance, she even got her own national holiday, the Purim feast. So the point of the book of Esther is clear. But what about Ruth? There must have been many sad cases in Israel's history of young widows which remarried. So what is the point of this Bible book? Looking at the most famous and indeed very moving words in Ruth, which you find in verses 16 and 17 of the first chapter, we read, "Where you will go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried." Should we see here in this book of Ruth a shining example of interhuman solidarity and loyalty, which goes far beyond the call of duty? An example that, if all of us were to follow it, would result in a better world, which would trigger the good in other people, like it did in Boaz, and will finally lead us all to a happy end? Or is this book about God's providence? No matter how bad, incomprehensible, unreasonable, unjust even life may treat us, we just have to hang in there, make the best of it as we see it, tough it out, and then, in the end, God, in his providence, will make it all right. Or is there another point that we need to learn? What is the message of Ruth? Before we go further this morning, and Lord willing next week, and reflect together on that question, It may be helpful to see this book in its historical context, and part of our reading was meant to do that. The book itself indicates to us the context straight away, in chapter 1, verse 1. It was, in the days, the judges ruled. And in the preceding sentence, which is the last one in the book of Judges, we hear what kind of days those were. In those days, Israel had no king, and everyone did as he saw fit. Moses and Joshua had brought Israel into the promised land, and both of them had told Israel in Deuteronomy 7 and 11 and 29 and in Joshua 23 that the Lord had now given them their allotted inheritance in the promised land. Each family, Joshua had given its own piece of land, and now Israel had to keep itself and its land holy, set apart from other people for the service of the Lord. And if they did just that, they would prosper in a land flowing of milk and honey. And every family would farm its inheritance in peace and prosperity until the Messiah would come. And every family was then to be represented by its descendants when that glorious day would come. Also, the laws regarding the redemption of the land in Leviticus 25 and the levirate marriage in Deuteronomy 25, about which we will hopefully hear more next week, were specifically designed to this effect. But if Israel did not serve the Lord, he would abandon them to their enemies. And that is what happened again and again in the time of the judges, which time followed Joshua for more than 400 years. And if you think that the times today are bad, you read Judges 19. Israel had become exactly like Sodom and Gomorrah, with whose fate the Lord had threatened them so clearly. It sounds like a never-ending refrain, Judges 2, verse 18 and 19. Sinning saved, sinning saved, sinning redeemed. Now, since Samuel, as the last judge, anointed David as king, and we are told in chapter 4 that Ruth's son Obed is David's great-grandfather, Ruth probably lived towards the end of that 400 and more year period of the judges. Moses, Joshua, the law, the covenant, not so long ago in the world history, but in everyday life, all this was now a distant memory, already disappearing behind many times of rebellion, evil, disobedience in the more recent past. And Bethlehem, which means the house of bread, the land allotted to Judah in Joshua 15, is subject to a famine. With this background in mind, let's then turn again to the question, what is the point of the Book of Ruth? Well, the Book of Ruth is a beautiful illustration and definition of redemption. Redemption means deliverance. Deliverance sometimes by strength, but in the Bible more often by someone else paying a ransom. Redemption is being reinstated as a child of God. This is a story of how God brings not only nations, as he did with Israel at the time of the judges again and again, but also individual people back to himself. Through the events of everyday life, God saves his children and shows them his redemptive grace. If we seek him, and if we seek refuge under his wings, he will always save us, always protect us, and always bring us to him. First, the Lord does this for Ruth and Naomi and Elimelech's house, here in this story through Boaz, the kinsman redeemer. But ultimately, God does this for all of us through the suffering of our Lord Jesus, the son of David, that David mentioned in the last verse of this book. And I would like to summarize the message of God's word to us this morning as follows. The R in Ruth is the R of redemption. Redemption is the point of the book of Ruth. And we note in the first two chapters three things. Redemption rejected by Naomi, the verses 13, 15 and 20. Redemption requested by Ruth, chapter 1, verse 16. And redemption reassured by Boaz in chapter 2, verse 12. So in the first place, the R in Ruth is the R of redemption. And we note how redemption was initially rejected by Naomi. In the time of the judges, there was another bad turn. In Bethlehem, the house of bread is a famine. Maybe Israel had left the Lord again, and their enemies were raiding the land. Or there was a drought. And the man named Elimelech, which names means "my God is king," takes an initiative. He looks for a solution. But notwithstanding his name, he does not turn to God, but he goes off to Moab. And his wife, Naomi, which means loveliness, goes with him. They leave their allotted inheritance in Israel, and they leave, since in the Old Testament times the perimeter of the nation and the church were the same, they leave the church to seek a solution elsewhere. A solution not with God, but in Moab. Now let's spend a minute on Moab. The Moabites were descendants of Lot. And although the Israelites would therefore not attack them or drive them out of their land, the Moabites would not let Israel through their territory on their long journey from the desert to Israel. On the contrary, their king Balak hires the diviner Balaam to curse them. And when that does not succeed, Balak follows Balaam's advice and seduces the Israelites to temple prostitution with Midianite and Moabite women. This to raise the Lord's anger against them, and indeed more than 20,000 Israelites die in God's punishment. We read about this in Numbers 25. In addition, the Moabites were worshippers of Chemosh, their god to whom they offered children. And it is therefore no surprise to read in Deuteronomy 23 that no Moabite may enter the assembly of the Lord even down to the 10th generation. That is an explicit order. And for precisely this Moab, Elimelech and Naomi leave the church and their place in Israel. And it appears that they plan to stay there. Their sons marry Moabite women, and for a decade they do not return. And how likely is it that the famine would have persisted for that long? Who would have been left in Bethlehem? So Elimelech's line would have run into the sand of Moab. His descendants would not be in their allotted inheritance in Israel when the Messiah came, if not the Lord had taken action. Painful action. Elimelech dies, and then both sons die. They thought they had no future in Israel. Now there is even less of a future in Moab. The Lord leads, maybe forces Naomi back. But Naomi still sees and analyzes things in an only horizontal dimension. Her daughters-in-law kindly offer to go with her, but she sees no future for them in Israel. The practical solution, she thinks, is a husband, a house, security, comfort, maybe children, and this provision for old age. And so runs the calculation. Where are their chances best? not in Israel. First place, she herself will have no more sons. And secondly, as foreigners, Orpah's and Ruth's situation will be difficult, possibly even vulnerable. And therefore she urges them to go back, repeatedly and persistently. Orpah and Ruth, not to Israel, not to Israel's God you should go in your need. No, my calculations and my rationale says you should go back and find a Moabite husband and worship with him your Moabite God. The saddest sentence in the book of Ruth is undoubtedly her advice to Ruth in verse 15, where she says, look, your sister-in-law is going back to her people and her gods. Go back with her. It is also a comprehensive rejection of God and his ability and willingness to save us and hold us fast. Go back. Go back to your gods. And one goes. Not to Israel and its God, but back to Moab. Poor Orpah. And while seeking the solution for her problems in the horizontal dimension, the loveliness, Naomi, has turned into bitterness, Mara. Now we should understand the miserable situation that Naomi found herself in. Even in Israel, where the laws provided for the poor, widows were a disenfranchised group. They might not inherit land, and if they somehow owned it, like Naomi did, they might find it difficult to work. Most likely they were reduced to poverty, dependent on relatives for handouts, odd jobs, and support. And superficial consolation like cheer up or rejoice in the Lord for Naomi, seeking her own way through these difficulties, is inappropriate. We should acknowledge the depths of her grief and her misery. And we can understand her bitter complaint in verse 21, I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. But even so, we see how without the vertical dimension in our life, how without expecting a solution with and from God, we are entering a dead end. And the despairing question, why me? Why is this happening to me? Turns then easily into self-pity. It is always me. God is against me. And that is what Naomi says. First, in verse 13, no, my daughters, it is more bitter for me than for you, because the Lord's hand has gone out against me. Note also how in her self-pity she ignores that both Orpah and Ruth had also lost their husband. And in her bitterness and self-pity she cannot say anything to Ruth after she stays with Naomi. There is no thank you, no welcome to Israel, no expression of confidence that the Lord will care for them. She simply says nothing anymore. Bitterness, indeed. And then she says it again in verse 20. Call me Mara, because the Almighty has made my life very bitter. The Lord has afflicted me, and the Almighty has brought misfortune upon me. So we heard that the R in Ruth is the R of redemption, and we saw in the first place how redemption was rejected by Naomi. We will now in the second place see how redemption was requested by Ruth. If Naomi's position was difficult, Ruth's situation even more. She also is a widow, but in addition in a strange land where she knows nobody, is new to its customs, and above all, is a foreigner. She doesn't belong. The position of foreigners is often weak, not part of the local families or the village community, and protection was hard to come by. Both Boaz, in chapter 2, verse 9, where he says, I've told my man not to touch you. And Naomi, in chapter 2, verse 22, where she says, don't go to another field, you might get harmed, make clear reference to this. And also the chances to find a husband and thus security, status and comfort would likely be less. Why did Ruth then go to Israel? Was it just loyalty to her mother-in-law? But in that case, wasn't it easier to stay in Moab and offer Naomi space and a livelihood there? Ruth's practical ability to help Naomi must have been greater in Moab than in Israel. Just loyalty. Well, her answer to Naomi certainly is forceful, moving, and inspiring. And we read it several times. It is forceful. Stop asking me to go back. May the Lord deal with me ever so severely. It's nearly an oath. Because Naomi had nearly compelled her to be so outspoken with her insistence to go back. It's also moving, because it clearly shows a deep love and commitment. And it is inspiring, because wouldn't it be good if all of us could be like that? But there is more than loyalty here. As said before, Ruth could have offered to provide for Naomi in Moab much easier and much better. If it was only loyalty to Naomi, why then commit to staying in Israel after her death? Now, Ruth's experience with Israel's God so far in her life wasn't the best from an horizontal perspective. Since she had come into contact with him through Elimelech's family, her father-in-law is dead, her brother-in-law is dead, her husband is dead, and all that is left is an embittered, self-pitying mother-in-law. And yet she must have heard something about Israel's God in that household. And then, of course, above all, there is the Lord, the creator and sustainer of life. And as it says in John 6, verse 44, no one can come to me unless the Father who sent me draws him. And so we hear Ruth not only say she will join her mother-in-law, but also in verse 16, your people will be my people, and your God will be my God. What a beautiful confession and testimony. Ruth wants to be one of God's children. The redemption promised in the Messiah yet to come from Israel, she wants to be hers. And in a difficult situation, her final analysis is not a calculation of the practicalities and the probabilities as to where she and Naomi can best make a living. But she seeks refuge under the wings of Israel's God. Your people will be my people, and your God my God. Inspiring words indeed. And it is, in addition, also worth noting that Ruth doesn't stop there. She doesn't leave the practicalities aside. From a confession and the request for redemption alone, you can't eat. Trusting in God and seeking His protection, His care, clearly prioritizing the vertical dimension in your life, doesn't mean that you have no own responsibility. And it doesn't mean that you can go and sit and wait for solutions to drop out of the sky. No. God's law provided for the poor, as we saw in Leviticus 19. And in verse 2, we see Ruth taking her responsibility within this framework of the social laws God had given Israel. And Ruth, the Moabitess, said to Naomi, let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I find favor. Only living in a horizontal dimension without trusting in God in our daily life and rejecting His redemption will lead into a dead end. It will lead to bitterness. And living with God, living with that vertical dimension, doesn't take away the responsibility to deal with the practicalities of life proactively. Ruth requested to be part of God's people and took action. And that is what we can do also. And we, in addition, have now the encouragement of Psalm 142, the psalm of one of her descendants, where we read, "I cry aloud to the Lord, I lift up my voice to the Lord for mercy. I pour out my complaints before Him, I tell my trouble. Then my spirit grows faint within me, it is You who know my way. In the path where I walk, man hath hidden a snare for me. Look to my right and see, no one is concerned for me. I have no refuge, no one cares for my life. I cry to You, O Lord, I say, You are my refuge, my portion in the land of the living. Listen to my cry, for I am in desperate need. Rescue me from those who pursue me, for they are too strong for me. Set me free from my prison, that I may praise Your name. Then the righteous will gather about me because of Your goodness to me." So we heard that the R in Ruth is the R of redemption. And we heard about redemption rejected by Naomi. We heard about redemption requested by Ruth. We will now see in the third and last place today how redemption is reassured by Boaz. We saw Ruth going out.